Hello everyone, welcome back to Conversation Street. This is episode 156, and today we're going to be talking about the episodes broadcast between the 29th of June and the 3rd of July in the UK. Welcome, I'm Michael.
I'm Gemma.
And we're recording late this week because I have my birthday.
Very exciting. Yeah, on the 2nd of July.
Yes. So.
And you were 47.
No, I was not. I'm 32 now, which is fine. So, thank you to everyone that sent me birthday messages. That was very, very nice of all of you. Especially to Jane, who said that we don't look in our 30s, we look in our 20s. So that was very nice.
We probably sound like we're in our 20s because we don't know what we're talking about.
Yes,
and also, happy birthday, Michael.
Yes.
Happy Canada Day, everybody. And happy Independence Day.
Oh, yeah, it's Canada Day as well.
Happy Canada Day for Canadians. Happy Independence Day for Americans. And, most importantly, today, for all us British people out there, or I guess Canadians can join in on this one too, happy christening of Princess Charlotte Day.
Is that happening today?
Yeah.
How exciting.
It is exciting.
I hope it's not as exciting as Miley's christening the other week though.
Oh, I don't imagine there'll be quite
Kate
as much
on the steps there.
Dropping off. And I don't want to be a mother.
Well, it's probably already happened by now actually, hasn't it?
No, it's 4:30.
Oh, okay. They should be periscoping it.
Oh, yeah.
No, that's the
Will
thing.
Should get out his iPhone and start periscoping. Should we move on to Corrie history?
Yes, tell us what happened.
It's been 75 years since Brendan Scott was born. But when was he christened? Nobody knows. 50 years since David Barlow proposed to Irma Ogden.
It was 40 years since Ronnie Clayton was born.
Who
was,
very good time.
Do you remember Ronnie Clayton?
No.
She was the one with the mole. She's Steve's girlfriend.
I thought it was a man.
No, I know. It's a common mistake.
That tricked me. 25 years since Curly was promoted to assistant manager at Better Buys.
I know, exciting stuff. 20 years since Alec Gilroy came back to Corrie after 3 years away because he wanted to stop Steve getting married to Vicky.
Hmm. Well,
he was
some
right.
People
he
will
felt
do
it in his
anything
horses. It did
to get
not last.
Out of buying somebody a present.
There's also been some off-screen death anniversaries this week as well. 45 years since Arthur Leslie died, who played Jack Walker. 25 years since Lynn Carroll died, who played Martha Longhurst. And 20 years since the death of Noel Dyson, who played Ida Barlow.
What a tragic week for Coronation Street.
Yeah, births on the programme, deaths off the programme is basically summing up Corrie history this week. So, how was Coronation Street this week? Let's find out now in Street Talk. Right, I thought this week's Coronation Street was very, very good. I enjoyed it this week. There weren't any kind of big wow special effect moments or anything, but lots of nice gentle humour and
human
stuff.
Human drama.
There was this week. Did you feel the same way?
Of course I did. I always agree with
everything
you say.
I say. It was a good one.
Because it was your birthday week.
Yeah, you got to agree with me.
So I agree with you.
And it's Deirdre dying next week, so that's going to be... I don't think you're going to enjoy it.
Build him
like
up and
kind of.
Knock him down.
I think it's going to... hopefully it's going to be... a good week because they filmed it
right
around the time of Anne Kirkbride's memorial and everything.
So
and
you
it's
can
gonna
get the
be
real tragic
real,
look.
Exactly.
You're such a vulture.
But I think it should be good. Because they can be good at that kind of thing. But yeah, nice to have some humour this week at least anyway. Before
should we talk about
sour.
The street talk
yes,
stories?
As good as this week's was, I wasn't able to come up with any good storyline titles.
Dives Diva Departs, that's all right.
That's okay. There were lots of alliterative ones this week. Apart from the second one, we really didn't come up with a storyline for
it. Well, I did, but you did.
What did
it's
you say?
Rubbish. Revenge of the Liz, like Revenge of the Sith, but it doesn't really work.
Does it work better than Rebel Alliance? Yeah. There are other Star Wars related fan recently.
For somebody who's never watched Star Wars in your life, you're doing quite well.
Thanks. Sorry, we didn't have a storyline title for that, but anyway... The Rodwell Rift is our next one. That's what we're going to call Michael and Gail's split. And that was quite good this week. With another fight between Gail and Eileen. Kathy's Cash is the next one. And that is Cash with a C-A-C-H-E. She's not loaded. She's just got a hoard.
Mm, exactly.
And there's also a bit of stuff with Erica and Lloyd having a couple of scenes at the end of the week as well, which we'll finish off with as well. So let's start about... the departure of
Julie.
So sad that Julie's gone.
Julie gets a top billing storyline this week for her final week.
I'm gutted that she's gone.
Yeah,
I'm sure you
I
are
am,
as well because you love her.
I love Julie, but I couldn't really have hoped for a better send-off. We spoke about it. We'll talk about it more at the end about why we think
it was
this
a really
a good,
nice ending for her.
This is a good story for her to end on.
But it is but very
first
nice
of
that
all,
she had to go.
As we know, Brian's been sniffing around, trying to get Julie to take him back so they can go on around the world cruise. And last week, Tracy arranged for him to meet Julie Carp, who is, all one word, a woman.
Brian doesn't know why it's only one word.
Actually isn't Julie Carp, the real
That's
one.
That's so mean of Tracy.
He's looking forward to this. He doesn't really understand why she keeps calling her Julie Carp. And says, how does she seem? And Tracy says, you might be pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, so we also had all the stuff with, what was her name, Talisa?
Talisa,
that's it, didn't we? So she's telling somebody on the phone that she's going to be going home soon.
Yeah, and Dev's like, should we make a pact, no more pretending? And just as that happens, Julie comes home, Dev's very distracted and says, Talisa's partner can't see that it's over between them. Some people are blind. And Julie obliviously agrees. How ironic. Dev goes off without letting Julie make him lunch because she wanted to have lunch together. He's just being an arse, isn't he? What a dick.
He was. This whole week, although it was a really good ending for Julie and Brian, actually, because I thought Brian was a lot better this week, it's made Dev look like really bad, hasn't it?
I know, but he does get like this with women, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He's quite good at... I don't think he realises how badly he treats the women in his life. I think he thinks he's a good bloke.
Well, he thinks he's just the charmer, isn't he, and a schmoozer, and all these women should be lucky to be having
probably.
Him, I think.
Yeah, exactly. So Brian comes into the bistro, and this is where Julie Carp meets him, and he says, there must be some mistake. And she says, oh no, I've been talking to you since like all the messages we've had. And then in comes Tracy and says, oh look, it's Julie Carp. Brian's told me all about you. And Julie says, her divorce came in last week, and it's very good that he's single and available, and let's go on the boat together. And Brian looks a bit like he might be won over, but no, he leaves quite quickly after that. And walks in on Talisa and Dev being slightly intimate. I can't remember where they were.
They're
in a
cafe
or something.
Right, yeah.
And she says something like, oh, I don't know what to do without you. You've liberated me. And he takes this completely the wrong way because she just means, like, you're my saviour sort of thing. But he takes it to mean, like, oh, you're my knight in shining
he
armour.
Does. Brian takes it to mean that, or Dev?
No, I think Dev and Brian both do.
Brian was just funny. He was just, like, walking. He's like, ooh, what have I walked in on?
Ooh, I can use this for my advantage.
Yeah, so Brian anyway goes back home. We see him with Ken later with Julie Carp sent packing away. And he goes up to Julie in the real Julie Carp in the pub and says about his meeting with the fake Julie Carp. And Julie just doesn't want to even know him. Still doesn't want to talk to him at all this week. In fact, right until pretty much the end of the week, she didn't want anything to do with him. That's when he says to her that she needs to watch out for Dev because of what he's just seen with him and Talisa. It calls him a womanizing rascal, and he'd hate for her to get hurt.
Yeah.
That's it, really.
Tracy and Amy are talking about their scheme that they did to get Julie and Brian together, this fake Julie Carp, and they think it's hilarious. They're laughing their heads off. And Ken tells them off, and they're not bothered at all.
No, Tracy says, oh, so for what it's worth, Mr. Packer, I'm sorry. And then Tracy calls her a creep,
doesn't
she?
Amy does.
Says that, yeah, and Tracy calls her a creep, which I thought was quite funny. But anyway, in the shop then, was it that Dev starts making his move on to Lisa?
Yeah,
are we there
right.
yet?
Yeah.
Yeah, and she tries to brush him off, and he says, look, me and Julie aren't going anywhere, it's over with you
what
now, babe. And then, of course, that's when Julie walks in. She can hear everything that's being said. They don't know that she's there, do they? So, and he told Talisa that he was in love with her.
Yeah, and she says, I don't feel the same way.
Which is interesting, because was it Tivor a few weeks ago emailed us and said that she thought that Talisa was up to something? And I didn't think she was. I thought she was completely innocent and oblivious through all of this. And it turns out that she was, wasn't she?
She was just a dumb idiot.
She could have easily been written as like a evil schemer or a sort of a man-eater trying to steal Dev off of Julie, but no.
But no.
Went completely
they just
other
went
way,
the
actually.
Other way with it.
Yeah.
So Julie scurries off, and then after the break, we hear Talisa saying, oh, you're just my friend. You really should appreciate Julie before it's too late. Mary comes home, finds Julie on the sofa, crying, saying, I'm not going to waste my tears on him. She tells him what happened. And then she realises that Mary knew and had an inkling, but she told Dev rather than Julie, and Julie feels very betrayed by this because she thinks that really she should have been the one that got told.
Do you think that Mary should have told Julie?
Oh, God.
If she only had an inkling. Sometimes it's hard, isn't it? Because
well, I've never been in this situation in my life.
No.
I wouldn't know what to do.
If she'd have told Julie, then Julie would have. I don't know how she would have reacted.
The thing is, though, Mary's loyalty is to Dev, isn't it?
Yeah, like,
in a situation where somebody's got a roving eye, no matter who's the one that's looking at the other person, it would be whoever was closest to you that you would speak to about it.
Yeah, and Mary is Dev's friend rather than Julie's. And then Julie and Mary were at each other's throats not a few months ago.
I mean, Mary did the right thing, really, because she told Dev to stop being so stupid. So she was being loyal to Julie, in a way. More loyal than Julie perhaps deserved, considering that they've always been at each other's throats.
Mm. I liked how Julie reacted when Dev and Talita came back home, because Julie's like being perfect wife, isn't she? Saying, oh, let me make you some dinner. Oh, and what was it they were talking about? He's made of his favourite, because he has got fickle tastes, and Dev's there looking more and more uncomfortable. She's made him piri piri chicken for his tea. So they're tucking in, and Julie's there badgering Talita about how her day was and everything. And then finally, she snaps and tells Dev what she heard in the shop. Although at that point, she's still under the impression that Talita fancies Dev back, doesn't she? But yeah. No, Talita is lesbian.
She's a lesbian.
Who'd have thought?
Well, I would never would have guessed.
That, and that's why she left her ex.
She is very into yoga, though.
Yeah. Is that... What's that going to do with it?
That's a joke. It's nothing to do with it.
Okay, so Julie thinks it's hilarious, doesn't she, that Dev's been chasing somebody who's obviously not going to show him any interest in her.
Yep.
And I liked how she called him a smarmy 70s throwback shopkeeper.
Aww.
So all over between those two. Now, Talita packs her bags and leaves. She's rather embarrassed by it all. And Julie's not interested in Dev's apologies, so she goes and packs her stuff as well. So I did wonder then whether she would be going straight back into Brian's arms, because it seemed to make most sense. But it seems to make most sense storyline-wise, but the fact that she was still like, no, I've been saying no to Brian all this time, I'm not interested in him anymore.
Yeah.
It's still even difficult at the end of the week to tell whether she really, really was interested in rekindling something with him, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So Wednesday then, Brian finds out that there's something happened between Julie and Dev, because Lloyd tells him that she's moved out, and so Brian is obviously thrilled with this. And one of my favourite scenes of the week happened next, which is this
weird
face-off between Dev and
It was shot
and Brian.
In the style of a Western, wasn't it?
Yeah, because one of them had some flowers and the other one had...
A rolled-up paper.
Yeah, it was funny. It was, like, there's extreme close-ups on their eyes and everything. And Dev says you're... Oh, cruising for a bruise, and then Brian says you're
speeding
for a
bleeding.
Which is good. I haven't heard that come back before.
And then they meet in the middle, and Dev says you're lucky I left my till unattended.
Yeah, they both sort
and
of they talk the talk, but they can't walk the walk. And Dev walks off, and then Brian does as well, and he like breathes a sigh of relief as well. I don't know who would win in a fight between those two, to be honest, because neither of them are the particularly kind of the.
The fighting type.
No, not particularly. So anyway, that was all quite funny. So Julie's upset, telling Eileen about how awful their life is later. Michael's packing his stuff because he's leaving Eileen's as well. And then Brian comes up. Well, we assume it's Brian, don't we? Because he knocks on the door and she tells him to go away through the letterbox. So then Julie and Eileen go to the bistro later. Brian comes along and says, like, I can't bear to see you in pain. And he's very persistent, and she's also persistent in not even wanting to give him the time of day.
No.
So doesn't he give her a CD at the end of the episode, a Joy Division CD and some a bottle of tequila, because she tells him that that's what she'd rather
be doing.
She
makes a comment about that, yeah.
Yeah. So, that is it for Wednesday's episode, and then on the final episode for Julie on Friday, Brian's badgering Julie in the cafe again, but she won't even, not even acknowledge he's there. Dev, on the other hand, has decided that he wants to go back to India now. He's just running away from his problems. He just wants to get away. But Mary's saying, look, no, don't give up like this. You've got to try it again with Julie. Because obviously she's not interested in Brian. She thinks that Dev could still have a chance. I was quite surprised that Dev would want to go back to India. And Mary said, what about the children? And he said, oh, they can just come with me and everything. But
that's stupid.
Very cowardly way out, wasn't it? I mean, I assume he's not going to go back there now, even with Julie gone, and she's not there to remind him of the relationship anymore.
Yeah.
So what happens? Oh, yeah. Brian goes round to Eileen's house again. She lets him in, starts insulting him, and then Julie comes round and says, finally, she's willing to listen to him.
Yeah, so Julie says that Eileen can stay while he pleads his case. And he says, I want a second chance. And she says, no. she doesn't want to be second best. And then Eileen says, oh, I'm very proud of you.
Oh, yeah, we said it was Brian that came round, but it wasn't. It was Dev, wasn't it?
It was right. Dev.
Yeah, I said Brian, sorry.
Yeah. And then Julie goes around to see Brian and says, look, what happened between us is ancient history, but I would like to go with you around the world, even if I have to endure your company. But don't get the wrong idea. I'm not hoping to rekindle our romance. And Brian says, in that case, you should go alone. I don't want to ruin your trip.
Do you think that was the right thing for her to do?
What? Yeah, bloody hell. My gosh.
She did win it fair and square after all as well, wasn't it?
Exactly.
It's not Brian's holiday.
It's not Brian's holiday to let her go on it with him. So she gets all dressed up in her lovely little retro dress that she's got, and she comes to say goodbye to Ardy and Asha, but they're not in, and they're going to a babysitter, and Dev's very upset and says, oh, you're back with Brian. Julie says, no, I'm not, and it's none of your business anyway. I'm going. And Mary tells Dev off for being the git. And then Julie says goodbye to everybody. She says to Sean, smooth things over with Carla. She had quite a lot of goodbye scenes, lots of different
It
people.
Did. It seemed like it was going on and on. It was a bit like Hayley, wasn't it, going around on her little wheelchair.
Yeah,
it was another case of somebody suddenly disappearing at the drop of the hat. And can you really smooth things over with Carla? Can you get away with no day's notice?
What would be the point? I don't think she's coming back.
No, well, that's
the
thing, isn't it?
I mean, in the show, she's only supposed to be going for three months.
Yeah, it wasn't alluded to the fact that she won't be coming back, was it? So,
tell by the fact that she was making a big deal of saying goodbye to everybody. But if you didn't follow soap gossip, you might think that she was literally going on a hiatus.
Yeah, that's true. So Brian comes running up while she's getting in the taxi, and she gives her a bunch of cuttings. He's got like a nice booklet.
Oh,
he's made,
forgot to say
he?
That Mary gives her a goodbye gift and a card on good terms.
To who?
To Julie.
Oh yeah, Mary gives Julie. Yeah, that was really nice, wasn't it? After everything that they've been at each other's throats for like 6 months or more. So that was really nice that they ended that like that. So then Brian comes up and he's got this book. And that's what makes her decide to let him come along with her, which is very cute.
Aww.
And she's still not taking it back romantically. And like we said, I think that was quite a nice way, because I think if she had said, oh no, Brian, I do love you all along, I've just been trying to fight my feelings, whatever, it would have sounded a bit fake. But the fact that she's gone and she was still saying, look, nothing's going to happen.
Well,
I think as viewers, we know, but they will get back together, won't they?
Well, have you said, well, she says, oh, carry yourself, you're coming with me. And then Brian looks like he's really smug and pleased with himself. And then Dev comes along, gives her a leaving present, which is she gets to say goodbye to Ardy and Asha,
nice.
Which is lovely. And she's crying and hugging them, saying, thank you, Dev. And then in the car, this is what I liked about the whole thing. In the car, Lloyd says to Brian, winning her over is not going to be that easy. And he says, I know, but it's worth it. So without them getting together, you know that they will.
Yeah.
Without it being forced over the course of one episode or...
Mm. It was, yeah. Lloyd had said something about his... Because Julie's told Brian that he'd had a smug face on. And
yeah.
And Brian says to Lloyd... Yeah, Brian says to Lloyd, this is my I've never been more happy in my life face or something like that, doesn't he?
So, sweet.
Those two are... Off they go. I don't know how I want it to go now. Are we just going to get like a phone call to
Eileen?
You'll
get something from Eileen or a postcard saying she's going to, probably something ridiculous, like she's gone to Bermuda, and she likes it so much she's going to live there.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's going to have to be mentioned in the next 3 months, because like you say,
she's on a 3 month trip.
Yeah, as far as everyone else is concerned. So it could almost be one of those things where they don't really need to mention it again.
Oh, I want to go on a luxury 3 month round the world. Oh my God, can you imagine how amazing that would be?
That would be lovely.
Does anyone want to sponsor us? Because we can do a podcast.
We can do it wherever.
Mention nice. We can give you a plug every every episode. And say, oh, look, we're on the cruise again. Remember, we said we're going on a cruise. Unfortunately, it would cost quite a lot of money to upload it.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Data allowance.
So goodbye to Julie and goodbye Brian. It's really good that they brought Brian back for her exit. We were gutted when we heard that Katie Kavanagh was leaving, whenever it was, 5-6 months ago. But the fact that they brought Peter Gunn back to play
Brian, I did appreciate that.
I really did.
They were always meant for each other, and we were so sad when Brian left.
I know, it almost makes you think, oh, what's the point of him going for the last 2 years? Because I'd rather have had 2 years worth of Julie and Brian storylines than than what we got between her
and
Dev.
It's not like she...
To me, the Julie and Dev relationship never really, really felt...
real.
Realistic.
No, I agree with you.
But I wonder if she hadn't wanted to leave, would they have still kept it on? Because I think the producers and everything did kind of probably see it as a proper relationship. But then with Jimmy going off on his... hiatus to India and everything, it's like they never really had time to develop it properly, did they?
Nope.
So do you think what's in store for Dev now? Is Mary gonna make a move, or although she said she's not interested in him anymore, do you remember when she said I'm attracted to intelligent men or something?
Burn.
But it wouldn't surprise me if that was what did happen. I have really appreciated Mary getting away from just falling over Norris in the shop and Roy a little bit, which is all she did for years and years and years. This whole nanny storyline and everything with Dev has been really good to see her human side and normal side, hasn't it?
Yes.
So anyway, that is it. Good luck, Katie Cavanaugh. Hope to see you in more things soon. And even better if you come back to Coronation Street in a few years. But please bring Brian if you do.
Yes, please do. Let's move on to Liz's Revenge.
Liz's Revenge, okay.
Which is in the notes is called Poker.
Yes, because that was what it was on Monday, wasn't there,
with Dan the Chin suggesting that Jason and Kirk have a poker match with him in the back. And I think I would like to play against Kirk because he doesn't know what he's doing. Bless him. And he goes to the bank to get money out as well. They invite Gary along.
He's got a poker face, though.
Yeah.
I thought that was the most hilarious thing of that episode is when... they ask him to pretend he's got a bad hand.
and he does his actual
hands. That's very funny.
You silly boy.
I think that Dan could do quite a good poker face. He'd just stare there and grin at you with his eyes on. He wouldn't have any idea.
He'd just be like, fold, fold. Okay, so, Liz... Dan tells us he doesn't really know why he got into it, and I don't really know why anyone did this.
Well, Kirk's ends Jason up he only plays involved. With matches or something, doesn't he? And the other guys
no,
have only
they
got
end
loose
up,
change.
They end up with money. Oh, Jason has to leave the game early when he hears about his mum having a fight, which we'll get to later.
Mm-hmm.
So, Carla steps in. Now, Dan starts being all sexist, but Carla's confident, and I think we know where this is going. Let's just say it. She wins.
This is the first that we'd really seen of Dan being a bit of a bad lad, hasn't he?
He's bad like egg.
He's like got streaks of a villain in him this week, so I don't know whether it's going to go that way. But I still don't want to give up hope on him. I'm still not completely convinced about this guy.
Really?
Yeah, I give the actor a fair dues because he was Dave Quinnan.
So? Yeah.
But I've not been impressed with the character at all so far, but the twist at the end of the week was quite exciting, I think. So anyway, yeah, Carla wins, and she even gives Kurt back his money that he lost as well, because she's such a good one.
She is a good one.
She just wanted to beat Dan, she says, because of his sexist comments that he made about women not being able to play poker. So, but Dan still keeps some of his money, doesn't he? And I liked how they referenced the clock again, which is one of the old... It was like the pre-Bistro Bistro. Do you remember when it used to be on it?
They would
always used to go
there.
To the clock. And
it had quite a big set, as I recall, and people could watch each other from over the other side of the room, which you don't get quite as much of in...
No.
Do you remember they always used to go, oh my gosh, so-and-so's just walked in.
Yeah.
They don't really do that as much. In the Bistro, they just walk in and literally go, oi, what are you doing here?
Yeah, no, that's right. There's always somewhere where everyone always goes out every night. But the fact that the clock still exists is quite nice, even though I'm sure they won't see the set again.
It's quite funny to do a tally chart of like every evening, every sort of in-house meal people eat compared to every meal they eat outside the house.
Yeah, what's
I bet
the proportion
it would be
of eating
like
at home?
4 to 1 or something ridiculous.
Yeah, especially those plats.
We think we're treating ourselves. We have like chips. Like, oh my goodness, outside food.
Maybe Nick's prices are so low. They are up north, aren't
they? They are up north. So it's probably like $3.95 for a pie and potatoes. That's what they eat, isn't it?
Yes, they do. But anyway, before they even go out, Liz and Dan go up with some Rumpy Pumpy upstairs.
Oh, lovely.
He's in there.
Yeah,
Wednesday.
He is in there.
Steve is back, hooray! Back from seeing Andy in Spain. How long's Michelle been back now? Is it 2 weeks or so? So Steve stood there. For
Steve obviously
fortnight.
Had second thoughts as soon as he finished marrying her. Like, oh God, what have I got myself into? Help me, Andy. You're my twin. Can't you go back and pretend to be me?
Doesn't work quite like that. We were saying last week's episode, weren't we? What's happened to Rover?
Yeah.
And here he was.
And we keep calling him Cookie. Cookie, which is her real name.
I always see her as Cookie. I don't know why, because it's, we know that it's not her show name. But anyway, I thought it was funny.
It's not her show name. She's got a showbiz name.
I liked how Steve is all getting a kiss and everything from Cookie. So I just did it again. From Rover and that again. Michelle was like second best.
Yeah, well, good.
Michelle's been fine still this week.
Michelle hasn't changed her name to
you appreciated that, didn't you?
Because Michelle McDonald sounds silly. And also, I think the soap writers have realised that with all the marriages these women go through on soaps, it is actually ridiculous to keep changing their names. Like,
yeah, divorced by the time the ink's dried.
Remember when we did Gail's character profile and it was like Gail, McIntyre, Platt, Rodwell.
Oh, no, well, yeah, she's only been, she was Rodwell for about 2 weeks and now she wants a divorce, doesn't she?
She does.
No, no, he wants a divorce, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, Steve is back, which is good. And Steve finds that Dan's having breakfast there with him. He's not happy that they've been playing poker without him.
Oh, dear, no.
Oh, no.
But they're like, well, if you think that's bad, well, why not? We're going to tell you what happened with Tony, because he's missed all of this.
I forgot he didn't know.
He realises that Tony's had an evil plot and it was all a scheme. Going out with Liz, and he was going around with Tracy, trying to take the pub off them, blah, blah, blah. It's funny how Steve doesn't immediately go, I'm going to kill Tracy, because...
Yeah, no, he doesn't, does he?
It seemed like when we were watching it before, Tracy was spending a lot of her time saying she hated Liz and she wanted to get Liz back.
Mm.
But she never once stopped to think about the fact that, you know, Steve was the love of her life.
Yeah.
And also that her enemy... Because, you know, it's a love-hate thing going on there. She never once considered him in any of this.
Yeah, so Steve's just not happy that Tony now owns half the Rovers. Which brings us to, like, the fan news item of the week, which is who owns the other half of the Rovers? Because there was somebody who put something up on the Coronation Street blog the other day about, does Carla still own the second half? Because we kind of assume that she did, but nothing's happened, has it? Because Carla went up and stopped... Tony, we thought, from buying that half. And I'm sure there was a scene where Carla and Liz and that were celebrating and Tracy gets told by Tony that Carla's bought into it, but she hasn't had anything to do with it.
She hasn't said, I'll sell it to you back, which would be the most obvious thing to do.
Yeah, maybe that's what's going to happen. I do like the idea of Carla being behind the bar partner. Of the Rovers, or even a silent partner would be good. But yeah, they need to... Pick up that sort themselves out, loose thread again, people. Yeah, so
they'll just forget about it, like they forget about lots of things.
Yeah. So anyway, nobody knows where Tony is. If you were Jason, you're in the situation. Could you like file a missing persons report?
Yeah, you could do, but he won't do.
That's what we should really do.
Yeah, well, he's looking after his business.
Okay. Well, maybe Liz then. Can't she actually say, oh, it's my boyfriend. I'm really worried about where he is.
Jason could, though, because he could say he's gone and I'm looking after his business.
Mm. Yeah, but if Liz wants to find him and she's the one that's interested in finding where he is, then maybe she should just do that.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, Steve says... Steve's getting more and more het up about the fact that nobody knows where Tony is. And Michelle's like, just don't get upset by it. Try not to worry about it. So this makes Liz get her head together with Michelle and says that, right, you're absolutely right. Steve's right. Tony's basically got away with everything he's done so far. So I'm going to teach him a lesson he'll never forget. Which sounded a bit more exciting than it was on Friday's episode. Although I did appreciate all of the Liz and Michelle sneaking around the builder's yards and everything, which was quite fun. Because at first Michelle suggests they get a private detective, but Liz wants to take the bull by the horns herself, gets Erica to do a shift in the Rovers while she heads out first to Barlow's Buys, because Liz has decided she wants to recruit Tracy to hit Tony where it hurts, even though Liz and Tracy are kind of just as much enemies in a way, I suppose. It's because Liz suggests that they try and shop him over these stolen goods that they've been selling in the shop, but Tracy obviously isn't going to help that because it's her business
as
well.
No, exactly. She would be madness.
Mm. But Todd, on the other hand, is looking a little bit interested in this. He's like, what's that, an evil scheme, you say? I'm in. So outside, Liz tells Michelle that it seems that Tracy is in on Tony's scam to sell dodgy gear. And this is good for her because she can now bring them both down, two birds with one stone, if you like.
Yeah.
And she and Michelle go around to the yard and let themselves in with this key that she swiped from the shop, apparently. So they're rifling through Tony's papers, but then they hear Jason turn up, so they have to hide, which was all quite funny. I like where they were like, poking their heads up over the sort of in the little window in the door.
Did you? I thought it was silly.
No, I thought it was funny. I thought it was funny. It's just a little comedy, comedy detective shenanigans.
Yeah.
And also when because that's when Jason's on the phone and he's talking about Liz and calling her Tony's crazy missus, and I think that's the thing that winds Liz at the most, isn't it? On the way downstairs, Michelle the klutz drops the keys into a skip.
What?
And it turns out that Jason has locked them in.
Oh no, yeah, she has to sift through the muck.
Yes.
To get to the key.
But they got there in the end.
Yeah.
What I want to know is how they managed to sort of put their fingers through the little grate on the other side of the yard to open up the padlock. They must be pretty dexterous.
Pretty dexterous, that's what they are.
So back at the shop, Tracy's annoyed to hear on the phone that some stock that Tawny ordered ages ago is coming in. Tawny. Is coming in this evening, and then she starts bossing Todd about, and that gets him riled up. So he then goes over to Liz to moan about this, about Tracy, and happens to mention the stock delivery. So Liz uses that as an opportunity to get Tracy arrested. I thought that the arresting scene was quite funny, mostly because of Sean, because he's there standing outside the Rovers just doing his OMG face, and then he scurries inside.
He was like, oh my god!
It's drama, must watch. Everybody come and have a look. So then. Who was it? It's him and Michelle and Liz are watching Tracy being carted off. Although it did turn out to be one of those fake-out cliffhangers yet again, because it's only about two scenes later that Tracy walked back into the Rovers looking smug.
Yeah.
Because it turned out she did have the receipts for it after all.
And she says,
I hate it when they do that.
I knew it was you all along. And Liz says, yeah, all right, it was me. And Tracy says, I want an apology. And Jason says, why did you do it? Why did you do it? And Liz says, Jason, I was just trying to force Tony out. But Jason gets really sad and then goes off and says to Todd, oh, maybe I'm a wrong and just like my dad. And Todd says, Jason, you are nothing like Tony. And I think he kind of meant that as an insult.
Do you reckon?
Yeah, like you've not.
You don't have the brain power.
You're not driving, I'm sorry. You're just a simple idiot. Tracy says, I'm going to London for some reason. She decides to bugger off, which is quite interesting because... as we know, it's Deirdre's funeral next week.
No, so... Deirdre's death. I think her funeral is in a couple
of
weeks.
Okay, well, why is she not going to be there?
Well, she will be, which is why I don't understand.
Why is she going to London?
I don't know why she's gone to London.
She says, Todd, look after the shop. I hope I can count on you. And I guess that next week, Todd is going to do something.
I would hope so.
And I wonder whether he's going to be against Tony or with Tony, because he's worked with him before.
It's really difficult to know, isn't it? Whichever side he thinks he can get the most out of for himself,
yeah,
to be honest.
No loyalty,
I wonder whether Todd would be interested in like getting a stake in the shop or something.
Mm.
Like getting Tony's share of it off of him. I don't know. He just seems... although he seems like the working in the shop is still a bit of a stopgap for him.
Yeah.
Because he's just going from menial job to menial job, isn't he?
Yeah.
And somebody as intelligent as him should be...
Breaking
a lot
it in.
More,
yeah.
But yeah, I don't know
just
about...
Like
I hope we're not being too spoilery to say that Deirdre dies next week, because Ken has said she's coming back for her birthday. And
yeah, and she is actually dead
she
in real
is
life,
actually.
People. And there aren't many people that look like Anne Kirkbride currently on the acting circuit.
We cannot replace her.
No.
Irreplaceable.
They could get a giant pair of glasses and just put them in a chair.
Yeah, I don't know which episode it is next week that she's going to die. I don't know if it's... Whether it's Monday or Wednesday, I'm not sure. But yeah, I mean, Tracy's going to have to be back for then, isn't she?
Well,
but anyway, yeah, she'll be there. Anyway, cliffhanger at the end of the episode, going right back to all the stuff between Dan and Liz.
Dan the chin.
Dan the chin and Liz the...
Hair.
Yeah, he talks to Leanne, and then when they're away... Where are they going?
They're going somewhere.
Going out somewhere.
It doesn't matter.
And he's like, oh, so Leanne's your real name, is it? Do you remember me?
And she's oh no!
Although they don't say
she
it.
She looked like she recognised him.
Yes, from her days as a lady
prostitute.
Of the night.
A prostitute.
So that's very exciting.
It is quite hilarious. But I don't know, what does it matter?
I mean,
I thought it was quite dramatic. And then I thought to myself, Cal's dead. The Nazirs already know that she's a prostitute.
Well,
I mean, Liz...
For one, it's going to bring back some horrible memories that she'd hoped to forget. And already with things like with Cal dying and Simon attacking her with remote controls.
No, I'm not interested.
But I suppose Liz might not be happy with the idea that he used to...
Happy, but she's only been getting out with him for a few weeks. Surely she'd get over it pretty quickly.
10 years ago you were... Yeah, it depends how like regular he was and...
Maybe he did kinky things. Maybe he was into something a bit strange. Leanne could go, oh, word for the wise, Liz. I think you should invest in some equipment, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, you're right, actually.
It literally doesn't matter because everybody knows Leanne was a prostitute.
Yeah. And if it was a secret and nobody else knew, that would have been...
Yeah, the only person who stands to suffer, as far as I can see, from this situation is Dan.
That's true
unless,
as well.
Unless she allows him to bully her or intimidate her or humiliate her.
Yeah, because you would have thought that Dan would have wanted to keep it quiet. That...
Yeah. What I can imagine they will do is make Leanne into some kind of snivelling victim who cries and gets upset when Dan keeps talking to her about it, and he'll just keep making snide comments and she'll be just harassed.
Yeah, I guess
which is boring, if you ask me.
Yeah, I suppose if it's going to have only Leanne in there.
Exactly. I can't see a good storyline. Like, Dan was fine until they started involving Leanne. Suddenly it's like, oh, no one cares.
Shall we move on to the Rodwell rift? Because this was another callback to the past on Monday, wasn't it? Between Gail and Eileen when they had their scrap. Because it was, how long ago was it? Like, over 10 years since they had that fight on the cobbles last.
Is it really?
I think so, yeah.
Gosh, it feels like yesterday.
And they were obviously referring to it, but trying not to. And I don't think it was quite as good as the original fight. One, because it felt like it had been something that had happened before. And two, because last time there was like proper rolling about on the cobbles and they had the village people line. But there wasn't anything quite like that. But it was okay for a fight. So Gail is missing Michael on Monday because he's out with Eileen and Lloyd and Andrea. And Audrey tells Gail that she saw Michael there and he was asking after her. So we then cut to Eileen and Michael and they're talking about their little tryst they had a few weeks ago, and they both say that they haven't told anyone about it and it's best to keep it quiet.
Good idea.
Yes. So Michael's talking about whether or not he should forgive Gail.
He's saying he can't forgive her. What else would she be capable of? And Eileen says, look, maybe you should give her a chance to explain, but don't say about us. And he says, oh, come with me. And she says, oh, I'm not going. It's quite interesting that Eileen's trying to get Michael to take her back.
Yeah.
Because they hate each other and you think she'd... I think she knows that Michael's better off with her.
I think
she's
so,
doing it for Michael's sake.
Like we all
she?
Do, really, isn't it? I mean, they only just got married. Are you still assuming that they will get back together eventually, Michael
yeah,
and Gail?
I
think they're going to have to, aren't they? So, meanwhile, Gail is being useless back at home, isn't she? How does she end up getting cake down her front? I can't even remember.
She just wipes it on herself for some reason.
And then she goes to the door to answer the doorbell with cake all down her front, and it's Michael there.
Yeah. And he says,
embarrassing.
Yeah, they have a little heart to heart and it starts to look like it's going quite well. He says, look, I thought I could trust you. And she says, I couldn't help it. I was cornered. No more lies and secrets. And he says, well, it was 6 months of deceit. And she says, oh, it was only three. I'll never do it again. Please take me back. And he says, well, look, I have to be honest here. The reason I had a little setback wasn't because of stress. It was because of Eileen and they had a moment. Really, was this more than a clinch? I thought it was over and it was only a little kiss. And immediately Gail freaks out and says, oh, she's been waiting for this for years. This wasn't about you. It was all about me. And he says that if you only spoke to her, you guys would be friends. And Gail's like, I think she should say, look, if that's what you think about me and Eileen, you're clearly not suited to be my husband. We should just get divorced now.
I'm glad that he did tell her, though, because if that secret had been...
Hanging over,
and then they
again.
Had got back together,
like,
and then it would have just split them up again later. So she marches off. She's just on the hunt for Eileen, isn't she? She goes to streetcars first, but she's not there. She's getting her hair done. She goes to streetcars, then she goes to the Rovers, and then finally she tracks her down, having a lovely time at the salon.
Yeah.
And Gail starts accusing her of romping on the sofa with Michael and grabs shampoo bottles and chucks them at her.
She's standing over the other side of the salon, isn't she, throwing them?
It was, yeah, and Eileen's there with a laundry basket trying to defend herself. It was quite funny, but it's not
It didn't
not
capture the original.
It didn't capture the original, I don't think so. Because didn't they have... It was only last year there was somebody that got dragged out of the salon to have a fight, wasn't there? Was it like Tracy got into a fight with Maria or something? Maybe, I can't remember.
Well, the brawl goes outside and Gail's throwing bottles and Eileen shoves Gail over and rips part of her jacket and says, oh, it made you look like Jimmy Cranky anyway. And then Nick comes in, try and hold Gail back. David and Kylie turn up and they're still insulting each other, Gail and Eileen. Gail says, "You must have been desperate going for a failed burglar with a dodgy heart and a fondness for wife fronts." And that is what, of course, Michael overhears this. He happens to be strolling along the street. And he says, "Oh, no, no, you carry on. It's good to know where I stand."
Poor Michael.
Oh, dear. It's all gone wrong again. Eileen, Jason and Michael go back home together. What are you going to say?
I was just going to say that I wish Gail hadn't said that. I don't think she actually thinks that about him. Because she does really, I think she does love him.
Yeah, I know. I don't know why she said that. It didn't make any sense. Why would you insult your husband to somebody else?
Yeah, I think it was just one of those things you say when you get caught up in the moment. I'm sure if you were to get into an argument with someone over me, there are a few choice insults you could say about me.
If I was fighting over you with someone else, I wouldn't insult them unless I was fighting with somebody to get rid of you. You take him. No, you take him. You smell funny.
Oh, if the smell funny is all you can come up with, that's not too bad, I suppose. So, Nick is telling Gail off back at home for scrapping with Eileen because he's still upset about losing this baby the other week.
Audrey comes in. You miss Eileen saying, "I need you to leave."
Oh, to Michael. Yeah, Audrey comes in and she starts moaning about having to clear up the salon. And
Salon.
And then Gail is miserable because she's missed her chance with Michael, maybe.
She might have done.
It was all her fault.
I think it's quite likely that she has now.
So what happened on Wednesday? This was about, it kind of switches over to David a little bit, doesn't it, at the beginning?
Cause David gets this pre-trial hearing letter and Kylie says, "Well, don't worry about it, it's just another step to getting Max back." And then Gail's saying, "Oh, I can't sleep all right because of Michael and Eileen being together." And David says, "Oh, you weren't together, so it doesn't make a difference."
Oh, yeah, he makes a comment, doesn't he?
And Kylie says, "Well, I never looked at anyone else the whole time I was away." And he says, "Oh, I was always looking at girls. I can't wait to get back in the saddle when this court case is over."
That is a horrible thing to say. And it's also not true as far as we can tell because he was too busy sparring with Callum, wasn't he, when Kylie was away? I don't think he even looked at another girl.
Gail says she can't forgive Eileen for what she's done, but she still loves Michael and she won't take him back. Meanwhile, in the cab office, Michael's in there. Lloyd is teasing Eileen about them being together. And they say to him, "We're just good friends." And then Eileen complains that it was Michael's the one who blabbed. And now Gail hates her even more. And then Michael has to move out. And as he's trundling along the road with his luggage to where, who knows where, really, because he didn't have anywhere to go. And instead say, "Why don't you come and stay with us?" He looks really reluctant, but they manage to convince him. And then they go. He goes to the bistro for a drink and Andy's just fawning over him. He doesn't look very impressed, though.
Yeah, because Andy's just glad that... Because he kind of saw Michael as a father anyway.
Yeah,
so.
He feels guilty and he also, I think, he misses Michael being his dad.
Mm. And then when Gail is happy to see this in a way, though, isn't she? Because she thinks, well, if Michael's managed to forgive Andy for it, maybe he'll forgive me as well.
Yeah.
But no, he wants a divorce instead. He tells
her
at the end of the episode. I don't think it's going to go through, but...
Well, they have to wait a year, don't they? So it's a
sort of... Oh, yeah, that is true, actually. I forgot that you have to wait a year before you get divorced.
You can't just get a divorce straight away.
Oh.
Yeah.
I wonder what's going to bring them back together.
Don't know.
I do not know. But I was surprised that we didn't have any of that on Friday because that was left in a kind of cliffhanger that you think there's going to be a little bit more to see from. But
there wasn't.
No. Okay.
Next, it's time for Kathy's cash. On Monday, we learned that Roy's got his driving test tomorrow. And we were thinking, I wonder if he's going to do the old fake out where he says, we knew he wouldn't. And he doesn't.
I'd love for Roy to do that, to go in looking really dour and miserable and go, I passed, really.
Suckers. He doesn't even get the chance to do that because...
He gets a phone call from Kathy on the morning of his test, doesn't he? And she's up distraught about something because she's left her phone... No, he's left her bag on the bus and she's distraught by it. So he's going to go and cancel the test to run away and help her, which was a pretty stupid thing to do because the test could have been over and done with in an hour or two, but you have to wait like 6, 7, 8 weeks to rebook a test,
exactly,
don't you?
It costs money. I think he was happy for the excuse to not do the test, honestly.
He's getting too worried about it.
So...
I suppose I bet like the theory test, he would have passed with full marks really easily, but when it comes to practical things...
Don't you think he was too quick to say, oh, I've got to go and help her.
Yeah.
I do.
He has been learning. How long has he been learning to drive now? It's been quite a long time, hasn't it? Which is quite nice for Coronation Street, because usually people sort of start learning and pass first time always within like a couple of months. So it's been realistic in a way, I guess.
Realistic. So he rushes off to go and help her, gives up on his test. And then next thing we see is Roy and Fizz bringing Kathy back to the cafe, and she's saying, oh, the only thing I've got in there that really is valuable is a photo of Alan. And then Fizz mentions the fact that he's missed his driving test because of this, and she says, oh, I feel really awful. I don't really know what she needed them for. They take her back to her house. No, it's and she like, gets
what did they do to help her that she couldn't have done herself?
All they did was take her from where she was to the cafe and then to her house. So she's saying, they want to drop her off at her house, and she gets really weird about them coming near or in her house. And then she runs off down the road and hides behind a bush. And then when they leave, she goes back down to where her house is.
Yeah, I kind of thought that she'd maybe given them the false address or something, because the way she was hiding and then trotted off, it made me think, oh, maybe she doesn't actually live there and she lives in some kind of hovel somewhere.
But, or maybe she's homeless, like I thought she was homeless.
Yeah, but no, because on Friday we actually get to find out from her, because it goes from bad to worse, because she's got the bailiffs round. So Carla gives Roy a lift over to Kathy's house to help her, and then she's there with her head through the window, telling to go away. And then she seems to fall off something and starts wailing, so Roy has to go inside. Well, he pays off the bailiffs, doesn't he?
Well, he offers to pay them off. They want £3,408, and he says he's going to pay, and Carla says, you're mad. And then Kathy comes rushing out, which is quite nice of her, to stop him from paying. And because she came out of the house, the bailiffs can go in there.
Oh, yeah, I forgot that's what happened.
So they go in.
Oh, yeah, yeah, it's coming back to me now.
They go in and come out going, you are
crazy, lady.
What a waste of time. You need professional help. You've got to go to court now. So they leave, and Roy and Carla are a bit intrigued. They go in, and what is inside?
She's a hoarder.
What a strange turn for this storyline to take.
I know, it's quite interesting though, because we like programs like that, don't we? When we were looking at storyline titles for this storyline, we looked at British TV shows that are about hoarding, and you came up with like five or six or so, didn't you? It's the in thing to have stacks full of rubbish in your house. I think that's really quite interesting. Was it a set, or was it an actual house, though, that lounge that they were in? I don't know.
It looked like a real house, didn't it?
Yeah, it was from the outside, wasn't it? So, she's been hoarding all of Alan's stuff. I want to know how long... Because I thought he'd only been dead for a year or something, and it seemed like there was more than a year's worth of
stuff
sort of piling up there.
I don't know, it looked like it was all quite new, and I don't know whether that was because it was a set, and they obviously had to dress it from nothing, or whether it was... Because she's just bought it.
Yeah. So this is where the storyline's going. What's going to happen? Are they going to have to just clear it and then she'll be fine? Or?
Well, they're sort of... Carla's making light of it and says... Well, first of all, Roy says grief does weird things. And Carla says, oh, you should see how many shoes I've got. And then, oh, and Roy had a railway, ha ha. And Kathy says, oh, I wouldn't know where to begin with sorting it all out. And Roy says, oh, you should understand you're not alone.
Mm.
And the issue I have with this is that hoarding is usually not because the person just simply doesn't know how to begin to tidy up, or they just feel a bit overwhelmed, but it's more a symptom of an underlying problem which can't be solved by tidying up.
Mm.
The amount of times you see these programs and they go back to visit them and they've done it again.
Well, it depends whether, like with Kathy, she started hoarding because she misses Alan so much and she wants to keep all memories of him. And maybe if they sort through it, she'll find a couple of things that she can have as a keepsake of him, and then that'll be the end of that.
Maybe. I know, I just think that will be what happens, which I think is disappointing.
I can't see this storyline kind of going off in exciting, sexy, explosive ways, can it? It'll just be like a nice
storyline
of friendship. But at least finally we know what Kathy's secret is, because she's been so
mysterious.
Yeah, mysterious, and she's not opening up to Roy and everything because she's been ashamed of what's been going on at home. So finally this friendship will be able to develop, I suppose. I think it's more interesting than the allotment stuff was. I was never that interested in that, especially as Sharif there, and Sharif seems to have been sort of cut out of the storyline completely now.
One thing I don't understand is, if Kathy's a hoarder, and I'm sure in the house I saw there was some kind of like flyer or leaflet that said something about a sale, so I got the impression from that that she was sort of a compulsive shopper as well as a hoarder.
Yeah.
So if that's the case, why didn't she have £30 to renew her?
Yeah.
Why did she come trucking around with, you know, like elderflower cordial when she could have done a car boot sale and sold all off her stuff?
But you said, because a lot of the stuff you saw there, you reckon looked a bit new.
And then the bailiffs went in. Bailiffs wouldn't go, oh, it's too messy. They'd be like, that will take that.
Mm.
That's literally their job, isn't it?
To
take stuff out of people's houses. They wouldn't go in there and go, oh, there's too much stuff in this house.
Don't want to start an avalanche by taking something from the bottom of a pile.
No, that's happened, hasn't it? Like, that guy got crushed under his own stuff.
Well, I think if this storyline carries on next week, I suppose it will provide a little bit of levity to the Deirdre's death stuff happening.
Hoarding is serious.
It's serious business. So.
So that's that storyline. There's only a couple more left now.
Oh yeah, there's
very small.
Lloyd and Andrew are getting their knickers in a twist about Jess, aren't they? Andrea's daughter, who's in Amsterdam, and they want to bring her some tea in Garibaldi's, but Jess doesn't want them coming over for some
reason.
Why
is that?
I don't know, but I don't know what the point of having that in Friday's episode was particularly.
No, I don't really need Andrea to have a storyline.
I'm happy to have Andrew and Lloyd's story.
But I don't need to know about Jess.
No, it's like with Jenna as well. Just forget about it. We know you got children. Just get on with your own storylines in the street, please. And then Nick and Carla for the beginning, and Erica. So Erica goes off to stay with her mum at the beginning of the week, but she's back by Friday.
When is her boring mum gonna die? She's just dragging everyone down.
And Nick and Erica basically decide not to take it any further. And then they change their mind, because Nick tells Erica he does want to be with her at the end. And that's it. And when Erica was sort of saying, oh, right, I'm going to go now that you be happy, I was like saying, yes, this is the end of Erica on Coronation Street. Bye. Don't. And then there's one other scene after the break where Nick was like, no way, don't go. I was like, no, Nick, don't, just let her go, please.
Shut up, Nick.
So there we go. Nick and Erica are now properly a couple. But I couldn't care less. Do you reckon that the Leanne storyline with Dan is going to play into this at all now? Because Nick and Leanne storylines are never too
Nick
far
Leanne,
apart,
yeah.
are they?
Well, she does give Nick a lecture, doesn't she?
Yeah, about staying with her. But I can't really muster up any enthusiasm at all towards this storyline, I'm afraid. Whether he's with Nick or with Carla. Cause when
you mean Erica or Carla?
Sorry, whether he's with Carla or Erica, yeah. Because like when he was going to be dumping Erica, I thought it was great. But I thought, oh no, he's going to head over to Carla and he's going to be wooing her. That's not going to be exciting.
And sure enough.
To be honest, I'd rather Nick was staying with Erica than going off with Carla. Because I don't want Carla to be sullied with Nick.
Me either.
And at least if Erica and Nick are together, then it means that you're going to keep her hands off her.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
Hey.
Hey ho, there's that storyline. Right, who is your character of the week this week?
Julie.
Yeah? Why?
Julie, because it's her last week and she was good and she wore a nice outfit and she had a nice cape on with a nice Demonte bejeweled collar.
She wasn't like ridiculous Julie either, was she?
She wasn't overblown wailing Julie.
No, I saw somebody on the internet saying how good Katie Kavanagh is when she has to do like her serious scenes. Like when she was confronting Dev and Talisa over dinner on Monday and then all the drama that came from that. I thought she did a really good job. So Julie's a good choice. If I may also say Julie, but if not, then maybe I'll just go with Brian because I really love that character. And last week I was a little bit disappointed that he was just being a bit of a sex pest.
Good choice, yeah.
Literally all he did last week was badger Julie about will you go out with me, will you go out with me, and he was just seemed annoying.
Fancy, yeah.
But this week when he was like, I felt sorry for him when the fake Julie Cart thing happened, and then when he got Julie the CD and the flowers, that was quite sweet. Or was it a CD and a bottle, I can't remember. The stuff with the confrontation with Dev was hilarious, the high noon. And then just at the end of the week when he got what he wanted and he says, oh, I've never been so happy, I thought that was quite
sweet.
Cute as well. So Julie and Brian, a couple that have left before their time, I would say.
Yeah.
But at least we know they'll really be happy together. So that was it for this week's Corrie. Let's move on to the character profile now. This week we have got a classic character profile for you. As we mentioned earlier on the podcast, next week is the time when we finally find that Deirdre has left us. But this week I thought we would look at her first husband, Ray Langton. He's a character that I never really saw any of, because he was never really in any of the classic episodes that I saw or anything particularly. I understand that Ray Langton is quite an important character, but I never really knew anything about him. So this is quite an interesting learning experience for me, to learn what kind of things he got up to, and hopefully it will be for you. But I don't know how much commentary we'll be able to say about it, because
it doesn't really mean
anything to any of us.
He was born on the 18th of February 1947, and he died on the 10th of April 2005. His mother was Mary Langton, his sister was Janice Langton. He married Deirdre Hunt in 1975. He had Tracy Langton as a child in 1977. He first appeared on the 21st of February 1966. Last appeared on the 10th of April 2005. He is in 800 episodes and played by Neville Buswell.
That's a proper name, isn't it? Proper northern name. Neville Buswell. that made me sad that Tracy's going to be an orphan next week. She's going to be a sad, lonely orphan, isn't she?
Oh, well.
So, Ray Langton was born at number 2 Gas Street in 1947. He and his little sister became orphans themselves when their mother, then their father, died when they were very young. Ray grew up and he was in and out of trouble with the police, and he spent a bit of time in Borstal as well. So 1966 was his first appearance on Coronation Street when he was a plumber, and he caught the eye of Lucille Hewitt. And the pair did a bit of babysitting together, which Ray used as an opportunity to steal some money from the Barlow's house and the Rover's Till as well. He threatened to break Lucille's arm if she told on him, and then he tried to pressurise her into sex.
Well, winner.
Yes, Lucille told Len Fairclough about what happened, and he chased Ray out of town. So that was his introduction. I don't know whether it was one of these characters. It seems like it was one of these characters that came in as a side character and then decided to bring him back a couple of years later. But he didn't seem to have a very good first impression particularly, did it? Especially somebody who went on to marry street icon Deirdre.
Exactly.
1968 was when he came back. So Jerry Booth employed Ray as a plumber, and Stan Ogden felt edged out and resigned in the business. Lucille fell for Ray again, though he was already going out with somebody else called Shirley Watson at the time. He told the girls to fight it out between them. Walton. What did I say?
Watson.
Walton. He told the girls to fight it out between them, and Lucille was victorious. However, she soon dumped him when she realised that he wasn't worth it. So Ray had
so fickle.
I know. Ray had to cope on his own at the yard when Len disappeared for 3 weeks, but upon his return, he offered Ray a partnership, but was turned down. Yeah, this Ray seems like a horrible piece of work, doesn't he? Getting women to fight over him and stuff. He's a bit... Are there any examples of like the ladies' men that would be like that these days? He sounds like a bit of a Charlie Stubbsy kind of character, yeah, maybe not quite so bad.
In 1969, Ray's sister Janice showed up. She was on the run from her probation officer, and then she and her boyfriend Bob stole Dave Smith's Jag, and then Ray found it and returned it, but he was accused of stealing it himself. So he found Janice and Bob with £550 in cash that had been in the car, and they had planned to run off with it, but Ina Sharples persuaded him to return it.
Ah, so Ray then quit working with Len and started up his own building firm. He started wooing Audrey Fleming, his secretary, despite her being married to Dickie Fleming. Ray and Dickie got into a fight over Audrey during the streets outing to Lake Windermere, and then, as you might remember, that was when they had the coach crash on the way back. So the coach crashed, Ray was flung through the windscreen and told he may never walk again, which what we know in soap terms means
it'll take you 6 months.
In a couple of weeks, yeah. So Dickie then took pity on him and invited him to stay at his house, with Audrey nursing him back to health. But by the end of the year, he was working with Len again, still confined to his wheelchair. I had no idea that Ray Langton had been in a wheelchair at any time. Interesting stuff.
In 1970, he was still in his wheelchair, but he got out of it
to play a game of darts.
And then the doctor said, "Oh, looks like you're going to be able to walk, because they can't be bothered to have you wheeling around the set anymore."
Oh yeah, this reminds me. Going back to this week's Coronation Street, people thought there was a continuity error in it this week, and I didn't even notice it, but I've heard people talking about it. Sean said that he took those flowers from that Julie was given to Sinead in hospital, but they wouldn't let him have them. Do you remember him saying that? But people are saying, hang on a minute, Sinead's not even supposed to be in hospital at the moment. She's been out for like 2 months, hasn't she?
Silly writers.
Well, not that we've seen her do anything apart from make a candle for Steve. anyway, back to where we were talking about. So he then started seeing Elsie Tanner's niece, Sandra, and accepted her marriage proposal. But Sandra was annoyed when Ray employed Audrey Fleming as a secretary again, because Audrey still had a crush on him. Audrey confessed later that year to Ray that she still loved him, and decided that her husband Dickie was boring. So Ray told Audrey that he loved her, and this news eventually made its way back to Dickie, who left, and Sandra also heard that, who got her brother to beat Ray up. So Audrey threw herself at Ray, but he says he doesn't want her anymore, so she leaves too, shortly followed by Sandra. So that was a bit of a bad year for him, really.
Was a bit.
Got beaten up, had women fighting over him, and by the end, they both left him because they didn't want him anymore.
He also that year employed two mates from his Borstal days, but when they were building a display cabinet for Ernest Bishop, they stole his camera. And they threatened to blame Ray unless he helped them pull off a robbery. So Ray convinced Ken to pose as policeman to scare his mates off.
Oh,
and then, lots. Also in 1970, he got into a fight with some gypsies when he suspected them of stealing scrap from his yard.
1971, Ray and Len employed curvaceous Gina as a housekeeper, despite the fact that she couldn't cook. But they just liked her boobs.
They just liked looking at her lovely form.
Yes, they were annoyed to find out that she was bringing a boyfriend over to their house while they were away. So, foiled there.
Wow. Who had guessed?
Ray had some fun at Stan's expense as well later that year when he found him sleeping in the back of a bakery van. So Stan was should have been working as a night watchman at the baker's, but he was having a crafty snooze. So Ray drove his van to some wasteland somewhere and abandoned it, and Stan lost his job over it. So he locked Ray in the ladies' toilet at the Rovers in revenge. They made up, though, when Ray offered Stan a job at the yard. But just as that was happening, Jerry Booth came back to Weatherfield after 3 years. So Ray and then sacked Stan so that Jerry could have his old job back.
Aww.
This is the extent of our commentary for this character, isn't it? Like, ooh, this means nothing to us.
In 1972, Ray fell for Audrey's cousin Vicky and proposed to her, even though she was pregnant, and she turned him down because she didn't think he would love the baby. So then, Ray set his sights on sports car driving Sue Silcock. He gets on well with her father, and Sue ends up dumping Ray and told him to marry her father, if he likes him that much.
1973, Ray briefly dated Rita, but she was only interested in making Len jealous because they have having a bit of downtime at the time. He later started seeing Deirdre and gave her a job as his secretary in the yard, and that was the first time, sort of one of Deirdre's first appearances, I think. So, Coronation Street had some proper issues-based storyline as well later that year in 1973, because in the real world, VAT was introduced.
Ooh. Ooh.
And so they thought they'd do a VAT storyline in Coronation Street. So a company that Len and Ray had done a job for went bust, so it couldn't pay them, but then they were told that they still had to pay VAT to the government for the job. So they then went to court because they felt they shouldn't have to be paying it. But Jerry ended up paying it anyway. So wow. that was the moral of the storyline.
You can't get out of it.
Can't escape the VAT. Ray and Len briefly left Weatherfield in disgust of Jerry, but when they came back, they find that he'd...
they came back because the business was booming.
Yeah, they found that it was quite booming with Jerry in the driver's seat.
In 1974, Ray took in Alison Wright, who was a girl that he'd met at a party one time, and now has a baby son. And she'd been kicked out by her rich boyfriend who wasn't interested in being a father, but Ray managed to reconcile them because he got fed up with the baby crying.
Yeah, now Deirdre was still going out with Ray at this point, I think, and she wasn't really happy to see him kind of spending time with this Alison girl. So she ended up starting getting closer to Billy Walker, Annie's son. So Ray, nasty piece of work he was, started to victimise Deirdre at work, and so she soon got engaged to Billy. 1975, though, when Deirdre's engagement to Billy fell through, she got back together with Ray, and they were married that year. That was a quick wedding there.
Yeah.
They returned from their honeymoon and moved in with Blanche, and Ray put the house into two separate flats so that they could have their own little areas. Also that year, Trisha Hopkins accused Ray of having an affair at the end of the year, but Deirdre stuck by him, and it turns out that he was just seen out with another client.
Oh.
Ah.
In 1976, Deirdre told Ray that she was expecting a baby. He was delighted and he started renovating a second-hand pram and he wanted to move into Coronation Street, but Deirdre did not like the idea because she thought it was common and dingy. Len and Ray got a contract at a building site, but they discovered that the foreman was stealing equipment and he rigged their scaffolding when Len refuses to keep quiet and they have an accident and it collapses under Ray and he ends up in hospital.
Oh no! 1977, Ray clashed with Deirdre over what to call their newborn. Deirdre wanted to call her Lynette, but Ray registered her under his preferred name of Tracy. And I think she's called Tracy Lynette Langton back then. So.
Lynette.
yes, born of Satan.
Oh.
Yeah. Maybe this is why Ray went off in the end, because he saw the potential in Tracy to wreak havoc.
Yeah.
So they moved into number 5 Coronation Street despite Deirdre's misgivings about it, and Deirdre returned to work at the builder's yard after Tracy had been popped out. So she tried to persuade Ray to set up in competition with Len when she discovered that Ray only owns 40% of the business, but in the end Ray and Len sorted things out for themselves. Now Ray was feeling that Deirdre was shutting him out when she suffered a breakdown following an attack by the man intent on raping her under the viaduct, but she eventually reunited with Ray after she contemplated suicide by jumping off a motorway bridge. And finally for Ray, we got 1978. With the business nearly going under again, Ray tried to take out a mortgage on the house, but Deirdre refused to let him.
What?
I know.
Don't take orders from her.
Ray and Len then entered the emergency call-out business to make money quickly. Ray grew bored with his marriage because he's a bit of a womanizer, and he started an affair with Janice Stubbs, who was a waitress. Now, Emily Bishop found out about it and told Deirdre. Yeah, Ray apologised to her and he said, look, let's just make a new start in Holland. I'm going off there. Let's start a new life. But Deirdre was like, I can't trust you anymore, and refused. So he left her holding the baby, Tracy, and he headed off to Amsterdam, where he met and married another woman. She got pregnant, but the baby was sadly stillborn. So that was all we saw of Ray Langton, because the actor had decided to quit acting and he went to work as a croupier in Las Vegas, which is...
Why not, indeed?
What a
showbiz thing to do. He said, I simply can't cope with all that celebrity stuff. I had it once and it affected my health and happiness.
Yeah. So it was quite fortuitous that he was in Las Vegas, because in 1998 there was a Corey spin-off DVD, Viva Las Vegas, written by Russell T. Davis, where Jack and Vera and some of the others went over there. And Ray was working, the actor was brought in to play a little bit part. He was still Ray, but he was working as a waiter there in Vegas. And he couldn't believe everything they told him about what was going on in Weatherfield, because they were like just saying, well, this has happened and this person's died and this person, Deirdre's going out with somebody from Morocco. And he's like, no, I don't believe any of this. And he told another guy not to serve Vera anymore because he thought that she was drunk. And he kind of sarcastically replied to her that he is now married to a man, has adopted 3 Vietnamese boat people, and is hiding from his evil twin. But now he could get married wanted to. Well, he can't because he's dead now.
He's dead. In 2005, he discovered he had stomach cancer, and he returned to Weatherfield to make amends with Tracy. He lodged with Emily Bishop. Tracy eventually softened towards him, but he died in the Rovers during Ken and Deirdre's wedding reception.
Uh-huh.
What a downer.
Yeah. See, when he came back, this is because it was one of the characters that I knew was quite an important one. It was quite a meaningful storyline for me, but the character just didn't... I didn't know anything about him, really. But it was nice to see kind of Tracy actually getting to see her dad for the first time ever, and we got to see kind of a nicer side of her, because she was so evil back then, just like now.
He's
really.
So evil.
She was absolutely gutted when he died, because she'd only just got to know him. But yeah, that was the end of the story of Ray Langton.
But it wasn't the only time he was in Coronation Street style things.
No, it wasn't. There was a spin-off in 1972. So this is when he was still in the programme, I think. And this is what we saw at the Corrie Fest a few years ago. He was he stars alongside Jerry Booth in a pilot of a spin-off show called Rest Assured. And they made one episode called Lift Off. Do you remember watching
this? Yeah, I do remember it.
So they're insurance salesmen, Ray and Jerry, and they're premium collectors. And basically the storyline was that they were collecting some debts from a block of flats where the lift was a bit dodgy. And he was trying to engineer it so that he would get stuck in the lift with a client that he fancied. And anyway, the turn of events happen, and I can't even remember particularly, but in the end of it, he gets stuck in a lift with a little old lady instead.
It was funny. It was quite interesting.
It was interesting. It was, I was, yeah, I'll say it's
an average sort of 1970 kind of TV show.
And it was supposed to be a kind of a comedy, but it didn't have a laughter track or anything, so it wasn't like...
It was a bit dry for...
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a fan of 1970s comedies anyway, particularly, but it was one of those other interesting Corrie spin-offs. It just didn't go as far as the Leonard Swindy one we talked about a few weeks ago.
It's funny to think that if they started doing Corrie spin-offs now, people would go, oh, what's the world come to? This is ridiculous, selling out. But they've got a rich history of doing it. They just seem to have stopped doing it recently.
Yeah. So there's not much talking points really for Ray Langton, as we don't know him very much. It makes me wonder how Deirdre's life would have turned out differently if she then had stayed with him, because... When you think of Deirdre and the love of her life, you think of Ken, and this is all pre... Well, Ken was obviously in it, but...
Yeah, Ken's always been in it.
I'm glad that... Because he just didn't seem like a very nice piece of work, did he? He was just like...
That's where Tracy gets it from.
Yeah, well, it must be. Because like, he was always going off... Well, Tracy doesn't go bed hopping, does she? Particularly. Not in the same way that he seemed to. He just basically seemed to spend all this time stringing other women along and having affairs with married women or pregnant women or whatever. And I don't know. Maybe to watch him, he was more of a cheeky chappy kind of nice guy. Because like, Charlie Stubbs, in a way, was likeable. And
yeah, he had a bit of charm about him, didn't he? Even though he's a wrong'un.
Yeah, he just seemed like typical kind of... I don't know, like... Jason, but Jason's kind of nice when it comes down to it, isn't he? But then he goes off and sort of gets into bed sometimes with other women. I don't know.
Naughty.
But if any listeners saw Ray Fairclough in the older Fairclough, Ray Langton in the older episodes, and wants to defend his case a little bit more and tell us that he wasn't such a bad stick after all, do let us know. I quite like the idea of having him come back and dying on screen. And it made me wonder whether that's something that they could do more of, or whether you'd want to, because there's still quite a few characters that have left Coronation Street a while ago, and the actors are still going. And it makes me think, would they bring anyone else back to die on screen? Because there's some characters that you just want to have closure with, like Bette, for example, because she came back.
She'll never die on screen.
What do you think?
She refused to die. They'd write the script and she just wouldn't do it.
Well, that's all what happened last time she came back, wasn't it? When she came back and then she copped out after a couple of weeks. Or, like, Hilda. I mean, she's refusing to ever come back on it anyway, but every so often I want to know, in the canon of Coronation Street,
is
Hilda still alive? Because you'd have thought that, like, Kevin or Sally might mention her sometimes, but she, like, literally never ever gets a mention, and Gina Alexander has never wanted to come back. But That would be a pretty significant event, wouldn't it? I mean, something like, say, the live episode or an anniversary. If they were able to get back an old name like Hilda or Mavis or something to come and die on screen, I think that would really get the viewers in, don't you think?
Yeah, I do. I think so. I don't know whether it would be a bit too weird, though. Like, some of these characters, I think too much time has passed.
It'd have to be somebody who's got some strong connections, I suppose, which Ray obviously still did. Hilda...
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of doesn't, but I mean, there are still people around that remember her. Or what about like Bill Webster or something like that? Because we thought that he was going to die years ago, didn't we? When Kevin came back from Germany after Michael Lavelle was off at that time, we thought that Bill would die, was going to be dying in Germany. And it seems like now he's split up with Pam. But I'd like him to come back, even if it's for a death. Or Dennis, even.
Yeah, but I don't want these people to die. I want everyone to live forever.
Is it like Julian Bryan? Just leave it to your imagination about what happens.
Yeah.
I don't have any excuse to have any of those characters back, to be honest, even if it's just dying. Maybe it'd be a good idea. I don't know. What do you think, listeners? Right, we will move on from that enthralling character profile.
So exciting. I'm sorry, guys.
I just don't know that character, but I thought he fit in quite well to what's happening at the moment with Deirdre, or will be happening. But anyway, you can't win them all. Let's move on and do a bit of news now, shall we? Right, it's Cabin this week. We've got lots of news for you this week. And first off, oh my God, Helen Flanagan has only got another baby.
A baby?
She's had a baby.
How exciting.
I know, she had to be induced because she was 2 weeks overdue and she was thinking she was getting a bit fat.
Aw, did she really know she was pregnant?
Yeah, she did. We even reported it on the podcast 9 months ago or so, however long. Happy baby giving, Helen Flanagan. We love
you. Happy baby giving?
Yes. Have baby birthing. Okay. We would baby love you. Birthing. You can come back to Coronation Street anytime, Helen Flanagan, and not die. You've got to come back.
Don't die.
The baby is called Matilda Jessica.
Interesting.
Why? What's wrong with that?
I don't think you should have two A names next to each other.
Well, she has. And there's been comments from friends and stuff about it, but the only thing I've seen that Helen has said herself on Twitter is, I cannot stop staring at or kissing my beautiful baby girl.
Aww. Well, good. I'm glad you like her, because you can't return
Thank you for being in our news section again, Helen. We've missed you.
We've missed you so much.
Now, let's talk about
some lovely awards. Gemma's favourite thing. Aren't they great?
TV Choice Awards this time. The nominations are out, and you can vote at tvchoicemagazine.co.uk/awards/2015/vote. And first up, we've got Best Soap Actor. So you can vote for Simon Gregson there. I don't know who the choices for the other soaps are, but I'll be casting my vote for him. And Best Soap Actress, not Sally Ann Matthews, I'm afraid to say.
Oh, wow.
But Alison King, our second best choice. So she definitely is deserving of that.
Yeah, I agree.
Soap newcomer then. So we've got Lucy Fallon, who plays Bethany Platt, and Sean Ward as Callum Logan. So we've got
Callum, my girl. I think Callum's good.
I think he's quite good. I don't know how about his acting, but the character's just kind of interesting. I don't think he's done enough where he's had to really, really show a range of kind of. You know what I mean? He's just been kind of campy and villainous so far.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah,
he's not had to do acting so far. Like, if Max ever gets taken away from him and David wins and he goes, no! Then maybe you can win the award. Lucy Fallon there. Okay, she's not been in it for long enough, but she's not wowed me so far particularly. She's just been
a teenager.
But I'd vote, if I had to vote for one, I would vote for Sean, I think, there. I'd have to say. And Best Soap, you can vote for Coronation Street. So,
well, maybe you will, maybe you won't.
Good luck for all of those in all those categories, Corrie. Speaking of awards, Corrie has also recently won an award for being the greenest TV show. I think this was the Observer Ethical Awards. I think this is quite a moral award to win, wasn't it? Yeah, because I mean, it's all very well and good being awarded for the TV show side of things, but the production crew have all been very green and environmentally friendly recently, since the move to Media City particularly. Apparently it's been praised for its recycling on set, electronic scripts and green related storylines, such as Roy finding a local supplier for his cafe vegetables, and what was the other one there was? Oh, the wedding storyline between Beth and Kirk, where they like made some of their stuff recycled bits. So that's all good. Kieran Roberts, the executive producer, has said, Coronation Street aims to be the first carbon literate television programme in the world, and we are training all of our cast and crew in carbon literacy to understand.
I think you need some of that, don't you?
To understand what it's all about and how they can take control at work and at home. Our sustainability work is an ongoing journey and now an integral part of the day-to-day workings of our programme. So he's obviously got the right things to say there. Carbon literacy, I've never heard it called that before. It seems a bit like snooty way of saying it, doesn't it?
It does, doesn't it? They
like to recycle things.
Yeah, they need to integrate their carbon literacy and post some blue sky thinking.
Yeah, it's kind of that kind of thing, isn't it? It's definitely good that they're doing that, I think. And it's like new, fresh start at Media City and having this kind of drive for it. Lucy Siegel, who is the founder of the awards, has said that our judges were bowled over by Coronation Street's commitment and energy to greening TV and film production. Greening, that's another way of saying
greening it up.
From salvaging cobbles for the new set to LED studio lighting and renewable energy to pioneering a carbon literacy programme for staff, Corrie is taking responsibility across every department and doesn't shy away from covering these issues on screen either. I suppose one other good thing about it is that Coronation Street haven't been bragging about it, have they? They've not been sort of saying,
rubbing it in our faces before this too much.
No, before they won the award, I didn't know that they were having carbon literacy programs and that they were like training all their cast and crew about recycling and everything. I think it's quite an admirable thing to do and keep quiet, but I suppose if you're going to get celebrated, then you should be proud of it. That's good. I think later on in the interview, he was talking about or somebody asked him about whether we'd like to see solar panels on one of the masonette roofs. That would be quite funny to see, because they're springing up all over the place these days, aren't they?
Oh, they are everywhere now.
Like, I can imagine maybe Sally getting some to like show off, but then you don't want to be saying, well, it's only like snobs that have it, is it? Anybody could have solar panels on their roof.
Yeah, let's get the Tinkers set up with one.
They're so expensive to get, though, aren't they, to begin with? They eventually start paying off after you've been having them.
Yeah, well, I said this before, like, there's no point buying them if the technology's going to improve and it'll be cheaper in the future.
Mm.
If it takes you, like, I think your dad said, it takes, like, 20, years or something.
Something like so that. I don't know. I'm not carbon literate, so
no,
I don't
you're
know
very
the or carbon numerate. So yeah. I don't know the exact numbers, but maybe I quite like things.
Well, we couldn't like have any, could we? Because we don't have a roof.
No, we don't have a roof.
We share it with someone else.
But good for Coronation Street is all I can say for that one.
More importantly, our other storyline is Kim Marsh winning Rear of the Year. She said, I
very coveted. And I'm not just talking about the award.
So funny. She says, I'd like to thank everyone from the heart of my bottom for voting for me. It's totally unexpected, but greatly appreciated. I'm very flattered to receive this award. It looks like all those extra gym sessions have paid off.
Well, I don't know what's more prestigious, the Observer Greening Award, or whatever it's called, or the Rear of the Year. That more people have heard of the Rear of the Year Award, I'll say that.
That is true.
Who is it that even does it? I don't even know who. Is it one of those magazines that awards it?
Zoo or Nuts or something.
Good old Kim Marsh. You're good at something, I suppose.
You can't age a good bottom, doesn't it?
It does.
Move on to another story. Corey fans wanted. That's right. There's a new TV programme called Watch Out, which is a rip-off of Gogglebox. No, it's like Gogglebox, but it's about people watching Coronation Street clips. And they were friends.
And other programmes, I assume. Online. They're going to get people to watch old YouTube clips online of classic Coronation Street episodes and film you reacting to them in funny, witty ways.
Well, like us going, who's this guy?
Ray Langton.
Ray Langton. Mm. Okay. they want friends, families and colleagues, and they would like you to call them up to tell them how much you want to be on their show. 020-7471-0533.
Yeah, UK residents only.
Or you can email watchout@hungrybear.tv.
Would you like to be on a programme like that? I think we're sometimes... We don't really...
We've got our own show. We don't need you.
Yeah.
Watch out.
And I think some of the things we say when we're watching it are probably a bit
highly inappropriate and would probably get us arrested. So, no, we're not going to be on it.
But I bet there's some viewers from England that would be quite funny on that.
And then we can talk about it and we'll be all jealous of them.
Yeah, exactly.
Even though we don't want to do it, we'll still be jealous. Because we're fickle and contrary like that, aren't we?
Yes.
Very. Let's move on to feedback.
Just a little bit of feedback this week, but we'll start off with a comment from Joe, who contacted us on Monday night to say, it's only Monday, but Julie is already my character of the week. She was amazing tonight. Well done, Katie and the scriptwriters. So she was on the same wavelength as you, yeah. There, Gemma. She was. I think that was probably her best of the week on Monday, where she was... when she was knocking Dev down a peg or two until he...
Yeah, good for her.
Yeah. Rebecca says, even though I agree last week's was a bit meh, I did enjoy the smaller parts like the pub quiz scenes, Amy and Tracy winding up Brian with the other Julie Carp, and the drug counselling scene made me laugh too. Yes, that was funny. Overall, though, it was a bit flat, but there were some good points and bad points. I would have gazed the grade the year so far, a B or a B minus. Some good storylines, but also there needs to improve. And I think I would like to have Tim as my character of the week. Some good scenes with Faye. And sorry, Michael, I loved his scenes with Miley. And I'm sorry we won't see any more of those due to the Hodges taking Miley away. Yeah, I still can't decide whether this is the end of Miley, because it seems to have been a big build-up to nothing if Miley's really gone for good now. So somebody loved all the scenes. I didn't mind the scenes with Tim and Miley. I was just getting a little bit sick of them.
You did, didn't you?
Now, a little bit anyway. Gemma, finish us off with our last email from Bobby.
Bobby says, hey again, Gemma and Michael.
Hello.
Still loving the podcast, so keep up the great work. Just finished watching this week's Corrie and thought they had a pretty good week. Hate to see Julie leave, but love that she didn't get back with Dev. My question this week is, why doesn't Liz and Tracy team up to get Tony? That would be an epic takedown for sure. And I see that Todd Scar made a cameo appearance in one of the scenes in Friday. Ha ha. He said lol, but I didn't know that. When did Todd and Jason go back to being buddy-buddy? Got a run, but looking forward to this week's podcast.
So the bit about Liz and Tracy teaming up to get back at Tony, I think Liz just can't bring herself to...
They hate each other so much because Tracy was, like I said earlier, trying to get a revenge on Liz for sort of going out with the boyfriend that she was already going out with, which is a bit odd.
Liz did try and recruit Tracy anyway, didn't she, at the beginning, when she was like going into the shop and said, look, let's bring Tony down from the inside.
Didn't
so
work.
I think Tracy just kind of threw it back on her. But I honestly, it might be quite interesting to watch to see them try and work Liz and Tracy kind of colluding together, like epic takedown, as you say. But I don't think that Liz... I just got a feeling if that happened, then Tracy would probably try and turn it round so that she would also be kind of getting one over on Liz at the same time, which I don't particularly want to see.
No.
And you're absolutely right about Todd and Jason, though, because they were kind of acting. Was it when Jason was on the bench?
Yeah, when
on
he was
Fridays?
Going, oh, I don't want to be like Tony.
Yeah.
Grow up.
Because literally, the last thing we saw with them together, well, second to last, was when they kicked, when Eileen kicked Todd out. And then we saw the next week when we thought that Todd wasn't going to be in it. He was just there kind of saying, yeah, deal with it, I'm back.
Yeah, and Jason was shouting across the road, I'm going to kill you, or something, wasn't he?
Yeah, something like that. And now they're friends again, it seems. So it's, have we missed something there? I don't know.
I think we've missed the fact that Jason's really dumb.
It'd be a shame if that, if they are just friends now, because I'd like to have them.
I'd like to see a bit of consequence for
Todd's
horrible.
That's what I mean. He can't
so
get away with it again.
Because it was such a long con that he pulled on everybody, and then poof,
yeah,
disappeared to nothing.
Yeah, maybe they just kind of forgot about that a little bit, like
I
the
Sinead
in hospital thing as well. So, I do not know is the answer to that. But right, that is about it. All we've got time for this week. Thank you for listening. We have got Deirdre's death coming up next week, so it should be sad.
Yeah, I can't wait. So very sad. Excited.
If you want to email us about anything...
If you want to email us and tell us how inappropriate we are, you can email us at conversationstreet@gmail.com or you can find us online at conversationstreet.podbean.com. And if you look for us on Skype, Twitter, Facebook and iTunes, you can just search Conversation Street.
Yeah, but our Twitter is @conversationstreet.
Yeah, well,
this is normally the point where I say the music for this episode was brought to you by podcastthemes.com, but that's not the only music we're having this week's episode. To play us out, we're going to have something that showed up online recently, the Coronation Street blog discovered the other day. Now, this is brought to you by Stretch Radio, who's made a mix of Flo Rida's I Don't Like It, which I've never heard of before, and the Audrey Roberts noise. So this is the Flo Rida, I Don't Like It, Audrey Roberts noise mix. Now, the Audrey Roberts noise, you probably have seen the video that was put together by Martin Hett, who did a little compilation of Audrey's that she says after every question. And Martin Hett was the guy who had the Deirdre tattoo. And I think it was this week that the programme was on. I think we missed it, but it showed us where they showed him tattooing his leg up. And also, coincidentally, I found out this week that one of my colleagues at school used to be next door neighbours with his mum.
What?
So it's a small world.
Small world. And also, Flo Rida is actually my dad.
That's a coincidence, isn't it?
That's strange.
So
really, everyone.
Our secret podcast that nobody else knows about could almost be rumbled.
Could be, but no.
So, this is to Stretch Radio, which are at www.spreaker.com/stretchradio or www.stretchradio.wix.com/stretch, and you can hear the whole of this. But this is quite a funny remix they put together. Made us laugh.
We'll put links up as well to find them on our Facebook and stuff.
Here we go.
So, this is the biggest... We would never be on radio. No other DJ gives like a massive speech at the beginning of every single song, do they?
I don't know. I don't listen to radio.
No, you don't. Shall we just go? Should we play the music and leave?
Yes, here we go. Enjoy. Stretch Rida. No. Yeah, Stretch Radio. Flo Rida.
I don't like it. Audrey Roberts noise mix by Martin Hett.
It's not. Well, it's partly by Martin Hett.
Bye. Bye. The noise mix is by him.
No, he made the Audrey Roberts noise video compilation. I don't know if he had anything to do with this.
Oh, well. Enjoy it.
No one talking.
I'm watching. I don't like it. Ring any bells? I love it. Uh-oh.
And you know what the worst thing is?
So good it hurts. I don't want it.
So what are you going to do?
I gotta have it. Uh-oh. When I can't find the words, I just go. I don't like it. No, I love it.
Gail tells me that you're working wonders on her front garden.
Feel a base that your booty don't. I want to get inside it. Run away for a few days. Think about love, baby, touche. Tied up like a shoelace. I don't like it.
You love it, don't you? There's anything else to say, do you?